This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Today, we're excited to be joined by Aaron Kinney. Aaron's the Executive Director of the Herma Heart Institute at the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. Children's Hospital of Wisconsin is one of the great pediatric institutions in our country. Aaron, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I never thought a former helicopter pilot or barista would sneak their way onto the show, but I've finally done it. So, kidding aside, my name is Aaron Kinney. I'm the executive director for Herma Heart at Children's Wisconsin, like you said. Essentially, this means I have the opportunity to act as the main hospital administrator for all things cardiac, spanning inpatient, outpatient, surgical, and even the community side of congenital cardiac care.
So I want to talk to you in a moment about cardiovascular care and the things you see for children and for pediatrics. Before I do that, I do want to ask you, are there a couple of things that you learned as either a helicopter pilot or as a barista that have been helpful to you? Because I believe that almost all of our career and life experiences lead up to our leadership position, our leadership role in what we do. Things that you learned in those roles that you reflect on that ever come back to you in the role you're in today?
Absolutely. You know, I think it's interesting. Things get really crazy in healthcare, and it's an active environment, and it's not uncommon to have moments of true life or death decision making going on. But coming from being a helicopter pilot, I had the opportunity to be a medevac flight for life in the Army. When working with some of my team members, sometimes we joke like, well, at least nobody's shooting at me right now. But truly, I think the real lesson there is more about perspective, always putting things into perspective and trying to have empathy, understand the other side of a situation and what, you know, what the full story might be before getting worked up or stressed out. And I think that that lesson was learned even earlier as a barista, right? Everybody needs their coffee. So to take everything with a little bit of grace, get them their coffee, and then get into the weeds.
I mean, do you ever see in the world of being a barista, where people can be either just a whole mix of customer approach, I assume, people being very thankful, thank you so much, for people complaining about their latte or whatever it is. Did you ever reflect back on that and think, oh my God, we're dealing with coffee, not life or death?
Sometimes, right? I mean, at the time, I was a kid too, so I didn't always appreciate it. But as I went on in the Army and then into healthcare, you realize how fortunate I was and others are who get into the service industry, having that opportunity to serve others and get that customer service experience early is so important because we're all people at the end of the day. And I would be lying if I said I was always at my best before I've had some coffee in the morning. So I think it just teaches everybody a little perspective early.
But isn't it so important? You pointed this out well for teenagers, young adults, others, to work some, you know, for outside people, for other things, you know, not just be a great student, not just be a great student athlete, but to work some because you get so used to dealing with people in so many ways, and that's so important in one's career.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we always do appreciate it at the time, but when you reflect on things. And especially when you find yourself as a leader mentoring others, you're drawing on experiences from your past. And it's so funny that some of my most memorable mentors and leaders were, you know, people that I think to this day are love being a leader, running, you know, different coffee shops, and even some of my closest friends in the Army, they're rising in the ranks, and instead of, you know, lieutenants and captains, they're majors and colonels now, but they're those lessons they learned early on serving others, I think, still continue to shape their leadership today.
Thank you so much. Aaron, take us now to cardiovascular care for pediatrics and some of the things you're seeing and some of the things you're proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think congenital cardiac care, before I started working at Children's, I didn't understand that congenital heart disease was the most common birth defect. So I've been blown away over the past decade working here in Wisconsin and having my eyes opened up to just how normal it is and something that affects so much of our country and the world. And I think when we reflect on this past year, there's been some pretty interesting things going on, right? I mean, these kids, a lot of the congenital cardiac kids have, compromised immune systems, and we need to pay close attention to them. So a lot of concerns with, of course, coming to the hospital, but some of their routine things, like routine vaccinations and getting back to school. I think the most noteworthy example is probably in the news with the MISC, the multi-system inflammatory syndrome. We were one of the first to kind of just do a town hall with families on it, help them understand it, and then be collaborative with all the other congenital cardiac providers nationally to make sure we're sharing best practices, continue to adapt our approach, and make sure we're doing what's best for kids. It really is a complex time, and it takes that multidisciplinary team. We can't take our historic approach of kind of buttoning the hatches and staying in our own lane, and we really are needing to work together with everybody. Needs to be our ally.
Well, fantastic. And talk for a moment. You talked a little bit about it, but a couple things when you look at your institution that you're particularly proud of through this COVID era and just generally.
Yeah, no, I think for Children's Wisconsin at large, I've been really proud of how, you know, they take a position, like you said when we started. It's one of the region's only independent healthcare systems that's dedicated completely and solely to the health and well-being of children, leaving us as one of the busiest children hospitals in the nation. We admit over 26,000 children a year, more than 71,000 kiddos a year in our emergency department and trauma centers, doing more than 21,000 surgeries a year. So that the focus our organization has taken on providing the best and safest care for kids, I've been really impressed, of course, this year, but over, you know, my time working at Children's, they really buy into that. I mean, they have this vision of having the healthiest kids in the nation. And so there's little things, right? Car seat education, immunizations, bullying prevention, foster care. I say those are little things because I think it's easier to have a target program with a result you're hoping to achieve and to put resources behind it. But I started at Children's as a manager, and I remember working with a couple of our surgeons, we came up with an idea to kind of change how we were providing care, and it was going to cost the organization potentially $1 million a year, but we had a lot of reasons why we wanted to do it and thought it would be best for kids if we did it this way. And as a young, you know, manager in healthcare, I was like, how am I going to convince anybody this is a good idea? And I remember sitting across from the COO at that time, he kind of stopped me as I was stumbling my way through a PowerPoint nervously. And he's like, no, just talk to me, Aaron. Tell me, what is this going to do for kids? And the doctor and I explained to him the benefits of the program adjustment we were proposing and why it was good for kids. And he said, are their outcomes going to change? Are they going to at least stay the same or get better? And we explained as much that they would, and he said, great, I'm on board. And we didn't even get into the financial side of it. So I think something that makes me proud to be part of Children's is really that they do go all in. They are here for providing what's best for kids, and they want them to be the healthiest in the nation. And then it's our job as leaders to figure out how to make that financially possible, operationally possible, et cetera.
And when you look at right now in trying to improve children's health care, improve cardiovascular care in this really challenging COVID era where people have a hard time coming to get, you know, their different treatments and so forth. They're worried in different ways and so forth. What do you view as your top three priorities as you move forward for the rest of this year?
Yeah, I think our first priority, especially over these next 3 months, is to try and continue to establish what the new normal looks like for my team. It's so difficult for all of us, I think, from having the hospital essentially closed down in March and April for anything other than urgent care, to some areas now exceeding budgeted volumes here in the summer. And we have this highly varied re-entry into school coming up and a sure to be interesting fall and winter viral season. I don't think we've experienced a season like this for some of our folks in their entire career. So a second priority is going to be actively pushing for new ways to hear the concerns of patients and what it's like for them to navigate complex health needs during this time. You know, we're fortunate, especially within Herma Heart, we have a lot of additional resources as a service line. We even have community programs like school intervention. It's intended to help families navigate their education journey alongside their complex healthcare needs. But this summer, we've been getting feedback from them on what it's like to have these complex health conditions during a global pandemic and what it's like to access our services. You know, the system's there to help them with education, but it's become a huge pipeline for the families to give us feedback on what it's like to come get their ultrasounds done or their fears about getting their immunizations or going back to school. So, and I think it's really encouraged us, like many health systems, to reimagine telehealth and even billable activity. I think a personal example there would be my son had an ear infection, and we were like, oh geez, we have to try to get him in, but we sent a message to his ENT doctor and basically sent a message and said, so do we need to get in or is this, he has ear tubes, so something we had kind of anticipated might happen. And instead of making us come in to do a visit, they said, no, we expected this would happen. Your prescription's waiting for you at Walgreens. Let's keep him home. It's better for him. They didn't get to bill anything for that service or that advice, but he got the care he needed. And it was just the right thing. So I think continuing to push, that's definitely one of our second priorities there. And then our third priority, I think, is we have to challenge our current business model. So much of the work we're doing is to get volumes and services, I think, quote, back to normal. But if we put the patients first, we really need to look at how we've done things versus what the patients actually need. And if this unique era doesn't provide us an opportunity to refresh our business model and our care delivery model, I think I'm very fortunate that Children's Wisconsin is completely behind these efforts, like I shared earlier. But so long as we can demonstrate something's right for patients, we're likely going to get that support. And we've really got to focus on keeping patients first, no matter if we're cardiac, you know, care providers or adult or, you know, entire health systems.
So, Aaron, you're having this remarkable career, great fascinating background, helicopter pilot, barista, that somehow or another led you to this role of now leading up this great Children's Heart program. Talk for a moment. You've talked about priorities. We've talked about other things. Talk for a moment about what advice you would have for emerging leaders, two or three thoughts that you would give to emerging leaders about how to approach leadership and to improve themselves.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think first piece of advice would probably be to encourage leaders to assume positive intent. It's been a huge push at Children's with their culture work over the last several years. And completely transparently, I wasn't sure what to think of it initially. It seemed like a lot of corporate training or mumbo jumbo, but over time, really letting yourself assume that even if it seems like a team member, a leader, a donor, an executive is doing something that doesn't make any sense, or even worse, like something predatory or negative, I think really letting yourself step back and assume that they meant well and we're trying to achieve something good really frames situations in a better light and lets us as leaders have a lot more clarity about constructive, clear next steps so we don't get derailed and kind of create problems where there isn't any. So a second piece of advice would be...
Let me stop you on that for a second, because so many young professionals are, you find in different sorts. One will buy into the process and what's being told to them and to just assume that it's good and work at it hard. And others are quite skeptical. And what you find over time, and it's not that there's not good reason to be skeptical sometimes, but those that are willing to buy into the process, at least hardcore, and then step back and think, often in the long run do a million times better than those that won't, that fight everything. And you must learn some of that in the military and some of that elsewhere. But this concept you point out is, or in medevac, is so critically true that sometimes there's good reasons for things. Just because you don't understand them as a 56-year-old or an 18-year-old doesn't mean there's not good reasons for them. I love that piece of advice. So bear with me. Let me let you continue, Aaron.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really has been helpful. I think, as you know, it's important to be skeptical sometimes, right? None of us want to be the emperor with no clothes. But at least letting yourself assume there was positive intent behind it lets you at least put together some constructive feedback about maybe we missed something or maybe we should consider something else instead of feeling like something predatory is being done to you or is completely a harebrained idea. So that, I think it's just been really helpful, and it comes up a lot with my teams as we're talking about mentorship and how to tackle challenges they're facing. And it kind of rolls into my second piece of advice, I would say, is probably just to trust the leaders on your team. I think if you limit yourself to what you can do as an individual, that's totally fine, but you're eventually going to run out of bandwidth and deal with the burnout we all read about. But finding ways to trust your leaders and really let them shine in the spotlight of their own projects is so rewarding. And it has the double bonus of enhancing their career, but it reflects really positively on your own team. If my leaders in HRMA are doing great work, I get credit as the leader of HRMA, but I don't need to take their projects and present for them. Letting them present and letting them tackle their big events and projects lets them grow their career and makes other people want to work on my team. So that's just been a huge benefit for our teams. And the last one, I probably shouldn't say this, but my teammates who hear this will laugh. So the last piece of advice would probably be, especially for emerging leaders, is fake meeting Fridays. The day is actually a bit arbitrary. It doesn't necessarily have to be Friday, but really once a week, trying to carve out fake but believable meetings. And you might not be able to get away with the whole day, but at least a half day. But it gives you this dedicated time to focus on your team, catch up on administrative functions. It lets you round and engage with your team without having to hustle off to another meeting. And unfortunately, it gives you time to catch up with mountains of emails and notes and calls, which aren't always our priority when we're in the middle of making big decisions, presentations, et cetera. But it's so important to just have that awareness of what our team's up to. So a small caveat, my Friday meetings are currently real, but when I'm able to do it, it's definitely a great way to stay caught up.
Yeah, but your point is you need to leave enough capacity in your schedule, just enough, that you could actually be thoughtful with people, thoughtful with yourself in terms of self-reflection, sort of setting priorities and how you deal with them and how you manage with people. Because if you've overbooked yourself, it's very hard to deal with people in the way that you should deal with them and respond to people and how you should deal with them. So I think the point is a great, great point about understanding you need some of that capacity. So I love the point, and I think we'll whatever you call it, we love the point. It's leaving some unblocked time so you actually deal with people the way they should be dealt with. So I think it's Aaron. I think it's a great point.
Thank you.
Aaron Kinney.
Yep.
We want to thank you for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast today. Just a great career, great what you're doing, and a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you very much.
Likewise. Thank you.